There's a second ad? You're kidding me. Close. There we go.
Speaking of advertising, you can advertise on the Webcast Beacon Network podcast.
There's like six.
What
now.
The hell? Seriously.
News and commentary on the Webcomic Beacon newscast.
Welcome, one and all, to the Webcomic Beacon Newscast, episode 24, because we did a little DC reboot style. this is the newscast for June 12th, 2011. Back from two wonderful weeks in sunny tropical Wales, am your host, Ross Scott of The System. My work can be found at systemcomic.com. With us today, once again, is the lovable Alex of Alex's Guide, which can be found at alexsguide.net. Hey, Alex, how are you?
Good. Wales was tropical, eh?
I almost called you tropical.
It was very much not tropical here while you were gone. So.
Oh, God. I went from, you know, nice, cool British weather to suddenly 100 degrees here in D.C., I was like, can I just stay here? I'll eat biscuits, drink
forever.
Tea. Fine. Put the kettle on. Things in bins. Anyway. All right. And I did watch Doctor Who in the UK on BBC. That was kind of nice. Okay. speaking of bow ties, with us also today, a guest this week is Dern of Hello with Cheese, which can be found at dernworks.com/HWC, or isn't it also hellowithcheese.com?
It is also hellowithcheese.com.
All right. So, hey, Dern, how you doing?
Ayo. So if you guys rebooted the newscast, is it now the NUS cast?
Actually, it's Newscast Ultimate.
Ah, going Ultimate style.
It's Newscast.
It's actually
Reborn Newscast.
It's actually Webcomic Beacon Newscast Crisis, colon, Newscast Ultimate.
Yeah, weren't you here for a Webcomic Beacon countdown? I mean.
Yeah, speaking of which, also, of course, with us, as always, is the Tropical Fest of PSI.
Aloha.
PSIwebcomic.com.
Tropical Storm Fest.
He is a tropical storm of swarthiness. Okay, so before we get into new articles, quick thing about old updates. We like to hear from you guys when you guys are liking the show, not liking the show, want to hear more, submitting things, suggesting things, what have you. And so one quick comment from last week's newscast post. I know there was lots of disappointment that I wasn't here. I apologize. I had to delete all of those massive comments. They were flooding the site too much. But Tara Talon did have a chance to say on the site, it's painful to hear you guys run out of time to discuss topics when it's clear that you have something interesting to say. I feel like I'm missing out on the good stuff. Would it be better to trim down the number of topics so it doesn't seem like things at the end are getting glossed over? Well, good news. We're going to try and actually lean towards the more interesting discussion parts and make sure we get through everything. And also try and cut T. Campbell off faster, sooner in the future. So, T, I love you. Anyway, so we'll try and keep that stuff in mind and keep this thing moving. But we do like to hear from all of you, so please comment on the post over at webcomicbeacon.com or send us an email at webcomicbeacon@gmail.com if you have any comments, questions, comments, what have you. All right, first article of the day, two quick tech newses in brief to get them out of the way so we can move on to more obviously comic-related things. First up, Apple has backed down from their prohibiting of outside iTunes media purchases being used in apps. Now, this is actually somewhat related because previously, if you had an app and you wanted to have purchased content, you had to have that content itself purchased through either the app itself or the iTunes app store, and therefore Apple got a slice and cut of that. Now, now you can have an app where content has been purchased outside the app on the on a website or just elsewhere, and it can be loaded into the app at a later time. This is a new revision and is seen as a backdown, which is kind of good news. So, for example, let's say people buy issues of your comic on your site and they have the free app, then that content can be loaded into it. The one rule is that you can't have a button that says buy in the app itself, because that would just mean that you might steal a dollar that could have been Apple's, and they don't. Exactly.
That's Steve Jobs' entire salary for a year.
So anyway, that's something to keep in mind. And there's an article over at All Things D that you can go and check out. By the way, all the articles that we're going to mention today, or at least the large majority of them, were compiled by our own Eric, whose website is exiern.com. And thanks to him for putting all of this together, as always. If you have any articles, be sure to send them our way. Also in brief, while not quite totally WebConnect related, YouTube has adopted the Creative Commons license for all of their content, or the ability to have the Creative Commons license, which means you can now remix things on their site a lot more easily without breaking any laws, and it should make the whole remix culture of YouTube go a lot smoother. And there's an article over at GigaOM about that. Now we get into the website of webcomics. As the New York Times paywall, which a lot of people were saying was working, wasn't working, would work, wouldn't work, when they announced it 2 years ago. It seems like it is actually working in a way that they wasn't quite expected. While they have seen over 100,000 subscribers really quickly, and it's been growing pretty well after that, what they have also seen is upticks in their print subscriptions along with the web subscriptions. And this article over at Business Insider and was linked to us and found on Daily Cartoonist. So this is a good example of a paywall system kind of working. And I know a lot of people have said about webcomics that paywall systems don't work. So what do you guys think? Does this show us anything different, or is this just kind of a you have to be the New York Times in order to have anything like this be effective?
I think you have to be the New York Times or something like this. I mean, it's the New York Times. It covers everything, everywhere.
Right.
It's not just some Joe Schmo with a comic that talks about rabbit breeding or something like that. I don't know.
Right. Though I will say, one thing that's kind of interesting in the article is that they're focusing a lot on bundles, because a lot of people look at the subscription options, and one of the options is you get the weekend edition and you get all the stuff online for a price pretty similar to the stuff online. And so what they're seeing is these bundles are actually doing pretty well. So maybe there's something to take from that in terms of bundling. And one thing that's kind of nice about it is that they're not separating their online ideas from their print ideas. They're combining the two into an overall unified kind of service and system, as opposed to here's all the print stuff, here's all the web stuff, and keeping them separate. So I guess that's kind of cool.
Yeah, I think that is a pretty good idea.
Yeah.
I mean, if it boosts the subscription for the newspapers, then it boosts the amount that they're allowed to charge for the paid print paid print advertisements as well.
Mm-hmm.
So works for them.
Right. By the way, so the article is over at Business Insider, and also has a very doofy looking picture of a guy in suspenders. So be sure to go and check out that article. And thanks to Eric again for finding all of this stuff and putting it all together.
And okay. Who is that guy?
Who? That guy in the picture?
Is that stock photo man, or is that the writer?
I swear he was in a Burger King ad 20 years ago. That's my theory. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. I actually don't know who that is. Mm. Is it Mart? Let's see. Open image and new tab. Riveting television right here. Oh, that's Arthur Sulzberger. Don't ask me who Arthur Sulzberger is.
Good to know.
Hold on. Wikipedia.
Type, 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 type. Oh, he's the publisher of the New York Times and chairman.
Oh.
But what's funny is when you Google him, he looks nothing like that guy.
Damn.
It's either a really old picture or... Okay, well, if you go to page... Yeah, I think it's just a really old picture of him. Well, anyway, we'll move right along. By the way, I will gladly post on the Webcomic Beacon, or make sure it gets posted, any funny image captures featuring Arthur Sulzberger. Please send them my way. Webcomicbeacon@gmail.com. Seriously. Okay. Moving right along. Kickstarter is the number 3 U.S. indie graphic novel publisher, or is it? So an article over at Publishers Weekly gives a breakdown on how successful Kickstarter's been for comics. We've talked about a lot over the last couple months. And as of May, Kickstarter had funded 10 books, comic books, which was directly under Dark Horse having 15 books and IDW having 15, and then more than Image, Boom, and Dynamite in terms of number of books that have come out in the month of May, and therefore kind of putting it in kind of a higher venue. Now, the article talks about, oh, well, this is a big turn, and oh, hey, here's this Kickstarter thing and all that kind of thing, but the comments then kind of break it down, and a bunch of people, including webcomics known regular Gordon McAlpin, saying, I don't know if I could quite call Kickstarter a publisher. It's more a service. So... first of all, let's start with the basics. Do you guys consider Kickstarter kind of an alternate form of publishing?
No.
Well, okay. If you look at what get from an actual publisher, I think there is a case to be made of calling it a publisher. If you look at it as the artist that wants to get money to get your book created, then yes, it's a publisher. But if you look at a publisher as somebody who also does the work of finding the printer, sending the stuff off, and then shipping the books out for you, then no, it's not a publisher. But is it, I think, at times a better solution than a lot of these, a lot of publishers out there? Yeah, I think it is.
I think
financially it's a much better decision for some comics, and I have to put a gigantic asterisk when I say that, because if you don't have a big enough audience or a good enough product or an intriguing enough way to get people to your Kickstarter page, it's not a good plan.
Now, see, with this article, and I think all the articles on Kickstarter aren't talking about, is how many things don't get put through and pushed through.
Oh, no. I've read a few articles on that. I've been doing a lot of Kickstarter research lately, and the number is at about 50% failure at the moment. And when Kickstarters fail, they fail epically.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's nothing sadder than seeing a Kickstarter that's been around for 30 days and has $10 in it. Warp, warp.
Well, a lot of people will pull out when they see that it's not going to work.
Mm-hmm. They don't sounds like prom night. Yeah. But okay, so Kickstarter is kind of a big thing. Now, Dern, you said is your Kickstarter up? The one that
It was going to go up this week, but because of other major announcements that I had to make this week, I was seeing that my own personal news generation was getting a bit too crowded. Mm-hmm. So I just decided to wait another week for Kickstarter to start.
All right.
Now, but I'm not actually doing research, a book.
Right. But you've done your research into Kickstarter. Now, Alex, have you done any Kickstarter research or have much kind of personal experience with it?
None other than like going through stories for the newscast, basically.
Gotcha.
I'm not really in a position to really start any sort of project that I would want to get funding for on there. So, I mean, my comic is a year old, and I still only get about 300 to 500 uniques a day. So,
if only everyone listening to this would go to alexsguide.net.
If only for my birthday present.
Mm-hmm. Oh, is it your birthday?
Well, no, it's the comic's birthday.
Oh. Right. Whew. Okay. Sorry. I missed that. Anyway.
Ross.
So the Kickstarter article over on Publishers Weekly goes into a lot of numbers and how much kind of funding has gone through it and things. I gotta say, I'm looking to get a book of the System comics out. Most people who know me have heard me talk about that for a while, and I've been really debating whether or not to do Kickstarter. Durin, you've done your research. What do you think? Should I do Kickstarter?
No, you're doing Kickstarter for a book, right?
Right.
Because this is actually where it gets tricky, is that I was looking at Kickstarter both just as a general cash-generating tool and as what it specifically is good at. And publishing books is where it gets tricky, because it's going to be difficult to stand out in there. When you do the Kickstarter page and you look at Discover a Project, right, and you click on the comics, that is a very crowded market. Like, you've got to build some good buzz. You've got to get attention from the right people to get that to work.
Okay, but this is kind of like selling things on your own store versus selling things on Etsy. Like, what if you get a chance to gain their audience and you can just point your already existing audience there? So what are you losing by doing it on Kickstarter?
So the question becomes 10%, because Kickstarter will take about 10% of your cost. So if you have a strong enough reader base and you could do a pre-order by yourself, I would almost recommend doing that. But if you have possibly the ability to expand your audience just a little bit more, like, you're looking for an 11% increase in your audience for it to be profitable.
Right.
But it's also a higher chance of getting noticed elsewhere. So it goes back and forth. If you're going to do a Kickstarter, I would say take about a month to get everything prepared. First, apply for the Kickstarter, get the approval process. Well, let me back it up. Spend about a week, look at what is on Kickstarter, figure out what you want your tiered donations to be.
Right.
Different little things that you can give away. Put together a nice package, send it to Kickstarter, and then after they approve
it. Don't worry about my package. Anyway.
Yeah. I have to jump in here. You almost can't do pre-orders as you used to anymore. Technically,
you know what? Excellent point, because of PayPal.
Yeah.
What about PayPal?
If you are trying to get something done that would take a long period of time, PayPal is not cool with that. You've got to spend and deliver a product within X number of days. Mm. And Kickstarter actually is a workaround that, where you can do a project that's going to take an extra 5 months. After people have paid you.
Interesting.
Actually, I don't know,
that's
5 months.
That's a very good point.
It might be 3 months, but yeah.
Yeah, well, I know I've funded Kickstarter projects that haven't come out yet, and, you know, I would like to see them come out, like Poor Craft that Spike is working on, and, you know, just isn't quite there yet. Mm-hmm. Still waiting. There
have been some that have come out, and I know for one of them that I haven't gotten all of my bonus stuff for,
Puppy
but
cow.
I'm not tremendously worried about it. I know I'm going to eventually get the bonuses for it. So, yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, there's. I think it's hitting the. I think it's starting to hit a point of saturation. You know, I think it was easy to be a big fish in a small pond on Kickstarter about 6 months or a year ago, but it's got a reputation for being successful right now, and I think we're seeing a lot of oversaturation.
Except the problem with that is that Kickstarter's revenues have been exponentially increasing in the amount of money that they've been generating.
Mm-hmm.
Now, some of it is like super projects where one particular project pulled in $250,000 for its Kickstarter. It was for a metal coffee bean that you put in
your
coffee.
Oh, that thing looked awesome.
It cooled it down, and then it kept it drinkable temperature longer. And yeah, that was a case of – and comics have it easy, because we're asking – when we're trying to get a book published, we're asking for money to give someone a tangible product at the end of it. That's very important in raising money on Kickstarter. My Kickstarter personally is going to be a board game. So I'm going to actually have something that when it's done, I ship out to people and they get to have.
I mean, I think most – I think there is probably some tips and tricks to some – what makes for a successful Kickstarter, but it's probably more the realm of another discussion. So we should probably move on to some other discussions. You, I do suggest that people go check out the article over at Publishers Weekly, which we found via Bleeding Cool. So go check that out. And do let us know your thoughts. Oh, and over in the chat room, JT Shea, hey JT, has a good point, which is that yes, Kickstarter is not a publisher. It's a producer and a place to get money. It's like crowd surfing and executive producer position. It can't be your can't be oversaturated because in the end, you're only asking for help from your audience, your fans, and not the general populace as a whole, which is somewhat true, but there is a chance to gain other audience because you have access to more people than you would if you were just on your own site. Okay.
So if you do it, be ready to work.
Yes.
Hard.
True dat. All right, moving on. Over to a article with a breakdown of comic book fans on Facebook by a bunch of different categories. Facebook allows you through its insight tools to figure out the breakdowns of demographics. This is why Facebook's been so successful for advertising, is they have these sorts of breakdowns of demographics. It seems that, well, guess what? Most comic book readers are men, or those that identify themselves as comic book readers on Facebook are men. The biggest group is 18 to 21, and over 50% are listed as single. Oh,
shocking.
Anyway,
I'm actually kind of shocked by the disproportionate male to female ratio. What type of comic books are they talking about?
Well, this is if you list as an interest comic books. A very kind of generalized thing. It doesn't get into specifics. And, you know, probably, honestly, a lot of people wouldn't... This, by the way it's broken down, doesn't include webcomics. Like, if you just put in your interest webcomics, that would not have come up in this
type of search.
Or just comics, too. Well, that they might have included. I'm not quite sure... They don't go into exactly where this
what they were searching for.
Yeah. I want to know exactly what the sample was. Was it just comic books? Because if you also added in webcomics and manga,
yeah, I know it's not that thorough because this is screenshots from the Facebook Insight, which is basically, you know, whenever you put something in your interests or something, it tries to put it into a category with other people that already put that same thing. That kind of automatically generates a page that connects them all. This is that for comic books. Mm-hmm. So it's not including anything that's not listed as those exact words in that exact way. So if you write, I don't know, comics and stuff, then it's not going to come up unless you customize it to do that. Or something. So yeah, this is not including a lot of things, but it is kind of a brief breakdown and has a lot of issues with, you know, what people are willing to admit on Facebook versus what they actually do and things like that. But there you go. Anyway, that's over at Graphic Policy, which is a cool site where comic books and politics meet. This is my first time coming across it, and I gotta say, it seems like pretty cool stuff. So. Go check that out. And Alex, way to be, you know, in the minority.
Woo.
See, now I'm having to try to find the demographics for... Oh, gosh. Wow.
My comics interest is listed as webcomics on my Facebook page.
Yeah, that's
mine
too.
And for a long time, I just had no interest or anything listed at all, just because I like being contrary sometimes.
Yeah, and the whole relationship thing on Facebook, I won't go there. Okay. Yeah.
Apparently, the demographics for fans of my comic have drastically changed. I used to think it was a 50-50 split, and it was. It's now a 66-34 to the dudes.
It happens.
Yeah.
I'll look mine up later when I'm not trying to host a podcast. An article over at GigaOM tells us that online advertising is poised to jump 20% this year. Now, one thing of note is that this online boost that they mention is with display advertising, which means the visual and text ad areas, not search advertising, which it kind of labels differently, and that it's grown, that it seems to be keep growing, which could mean more revenue for internet people like ourselves. Yay.
Yay.
You know, after doing all the web design redesign stuff that I've been talking about lately, I've done some discussions with a lot of webcomic artists, and they say that a lot of revenue for webcomics does come through advertising, which is honestly kind of surprising to me.
Like I said, your ads are in a bad spot. That's what I'm saying.
Yep. So, you know, there are a lot of ways to go about that, and we can just expect more in the future. Okay, on to an article that brings us to our guest of the honor. Over at Wizards of the Coast, makers of Dungeons & Dragons and other such games, including Magic the Gathering, had to mention it. I mean, that was 10 years of my life. I'll never get back. So... I tap a few mana to play this story where Wizards of the Coast has decided to feature a series of comics on their site. They label it as kind of a new experiment and test that they're trying to do. And there's going to be, quote, "Ultimately, we decided on a mixed approach. Our current plans start things off with Mondays and Wednesdays with a new series from Aaron Williams called Epic Campaign. And on Fridays, we're adding to this series... by running cartoons for a variety of artists in a variety of styles, the first of which is Dern and his artist O working on one called Alignments. So, first of all, Dern, that's awesome news. Congratulations.
Well, thank you.
I'm out the biggest nerd here.
I'm very absolutely, like, there were times when I got this gig and I definitely looked around like, wait, how did we pull that off? But at the same time, it's a lot of fun to write.
So let's take a moment and tell us, Dern, how did you pull it off?
Well, there was an ad about, I want to say 4 months ago that was on, it was on The Art Order, which is a blog by the guy who's the art director, and he ended up kind of...
I'm sorry, what site? So, Art Order?
Shoot, I better actually get the correct site for that. You know what? It'll be better if I just give you the link afterwards.
All right.
But it's his personal blog, and he's the art director for Wizards of the Coast's online efforts. And he was basically saying, hey, I've been given a budget where we're going to be allowed to give webcomics a shot for Dungeons & Dragons. If you've got a good idea, send it on over, and we'll take a look at it. And,
so this is the case of a webcomics fan who happens to be in a position to help out webcomics, posting, yep, saying, attention webcomics, I want to help you, let's make this happen.
Yeah, and okay. it was an actual paying gig type of situation. This wasn't one of those, the great example would be Platinum Comics, and they're, you know, put in your attempt to get something done and say, oh, hey, we'll see, if you win, we give you a contract. This was a case of, you know, show us your portfolios, give us a quick summary of what you want to do, and if we like it, we'll hire you. And you'll get to give a couple pages. And if right now the experiment's going on multiple levels, we're trying to see where does the audience like this. If it generates a lot of attention, then it will be very good for the Wizard of the Coast higher-ups to say, yes, let's keep webcomics on our site. This is something that I really would like to see more companies start doing in the...
Can I interrupt you for just a second, Dern?
Sure.
So over, and this will be linked, they have a blog called Funny Business, an article called Design and Development. Maybe that's the other way around. They say in this post, as we've been telling these artists, we're publishing cartoons as something of an experiment. D&D is all about mad experiments. After all, how else would the Owlbear have come about? First, we want to make sure that you're even interested in having cartoons on the website. Second, we're trying to find the artists, subjects, and cartoons that best resonate with you. And then over at the end, they say, visiting the cartoons themselves is one thing, but beyond the cold, hard numbers of web traffic analytics, we also want to hear from you directly in the comments field of each cartoon, on the boards, by email, on Facebook, however you prefer to reach us. You can always send us direct message to my community profile, etc. So they're seriously interested in actual people feedback.
Mm-hmm. And so far, we've gotten a lot of feedback on ours. I'm very excited about that, especially since the comic they opened with is done by Aaron Williams. This is the guy that did Nodwick for Dragon Magazine back in the day.
Like, yeah, they even mentioned
back
that on the air.
With Wizards of the Coast, and it's really excited to be like, here's the guy who did Nodwick, and here are these two guys that you've probably never heard of, unless you're a really big Commission fan. And we did bring our fan base with us. And
nice. Yeah, I didn't see a post on Commissioned about it yet.
Yeah, it was only tweet. No. It's on. It's in the blog for Friday's post.
Okay. Well, it wasn't. Yeah, I think I looked earlier than when Friday had gone up.
We're definitely spending this week and next week pimping it pretty hard, getting as many people to check it out. The first one went up Friday, and I believe next Friday we're getting another comic up, which sort of follows the adventure of what happens after a naked man slaps you in the face.
So now, you've already been paid for this work that's going up right now, right?
Yes.
So you're driving traffic there for the sake of trying to get more work from them.
Pretty much. This is something that, yeah, I would like to have a full-time gig doing. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, Obsidian Abnormal, the guy who draws Hello with Cheese, he also draws...
Totally lost internet connection all of a sudden. So.
Happens.
So we last left with Dern saying that he
You were describing
to...
who O is.
Right.
Yes. Just really quick random side question. Whenever Skype calls you guys, does anyone else have the temptation to not answer right away? Just to, like, listen to that groovy little dial-in music. It's classy, too. Yeah. But no, I was actually saying how, for some masochistic reason, I actually want to draw, or I want to write 5 pages of comic a week, and O is okay drawing about 10 pages of comic a week. So we're not worried. It's like when, like, I have to... tell that to my personal fan base and say, hey, we're not going to be is anybody else's Ustream reloading right now?
Yes.
I just had the chat popped out now. So.
Damn it.
So I'm good. Neener.
I gotta wait
go.
In case this is coming over.
No, it's not.
I'm not sure if I even was broadcasting this whole time, and I apologize if I weren't. I don't think I pushed the button. We'll
no,
see.
You were.
Oh, okay. Yeah. People have been talking to us.
Yes.
All right,
I've
cool.
I've been posting the links in the chat room, at least.
Okay. I believe we're back.
Yeah, we are. Go.
Okay.
So O writes lots of pages.
No, I write lots of pages. O draws lots of pages. And
yeah, I've seen you draw. It's a good thing.
It's one of those things where we're able to, we're not worried about losing our original comics just for the sake of going and doing a comic for someone else.
Right.
I mean, it's an interesting job because it is for hire. It is the type of work where we're not going to own this stuff when we're done with it. And we both talked about it and we're going to do a great comic, but we're okay with this. We're okay with the idea of, you know, this is going to be things that other people get to play with when we're done with them. So,
alrighty.
Yeah.
Prodigal cartoonists return.
A lot of webcomicers have had problems with that type of arrangement, and I just don't see it. It's one of those situations where we're getting paid.
It's a business decision, you know?
Yeah.
It's just one of many that you can make.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right, then. So, with that, we'll move on to our quick break, actually. So we're going to take a very quick break. Ustream, you'll barely know what happened. And come right back after a message from whoever says something during the break.
This program is a part of the Webcast Beacon Network and is hosted on the Rampage Network. Follow us on Twitter at Webcomic Beacon. Email us at webcomicbeacon@gmail.com or leave us a voicemail by calling 1-320-310-0922. The Webcast Beacon Network, covering and promoting creativity and the creative process since 2007. Webcomics, comic news, tropes, and web fiction at webcastbeacon.com. Now, back to our show.
How much does it cost to get the break ad?
Presently, if you'd like to advertise on the Webcast Beacon Network podcast, you know that's available. It's an introductory price of $10 per episode.
Oh, fast.
Yeah, sorry. Well, it was
Dern,
more,
you should totally buy an ad on the episode that you're on.
There is a very strong temptation right now to buy an ad just for alignments, but I'm going to resist.
You get the webcast beacon bump.
So it would be like right after I'm done talking about it. Use this break now. Go check out alignments.
All five, all seven people on the Ustream, two of which are me and Alex, will go.
It also comes with a banner link that stays on the post as well. As well as two audio spots.
How am I not a viewer on this? This is so weird.
All right. Well,
I'm signed in. I'm in the Ustream.
So, Fess, whenever you're ready, we can get back.
Well, I'm ready. I'm ready.
All right. Unfortunately, Marshmallow Kitty is going to get some breakfast. I think we should all wait for her, him, them. Not really. Okay, we'll move right along. All right, and welcome back. Here we are back in the newscast. It's probably been about 2 seconds for you guys, so we'll jump right back in. First is an article over in our kind of education section on the importance of silhouettes, discussing how it's really important that your characters look like individual characters, even from their silhouette. Kind of an interesting thing. I'm pretty sure I saw this on a trivia night one time. And there's a few links there. They all go to bobjinx.blogspot.com, and it was originally found on Twitter via Dan the Shiv.
Dan Shive.
Dan Shive.
Dan Shive. That's good, because I was just ruining that. Anyway, be sure to check that out. It's worth it if you're an artsy person. Also mentioned in brief, John Allison has an article on the importance of confidence when selling your work. Now, this one actually I found pretty interesting because it's called "The Self-Deprecation Has to Stop," talking about how there's a horrible problem, especially in webcomics, of people saying, "Well, here's my comic, and I guess it's not very good, and I guess you should read it, but it's new and it's not that good yet," and naming it things like "my crappy webcomic" and "shitty comics" and things like that. And basically, John Allison saying, you should stop that, because why should anyone else look at it if you don't think it's any good? I got to say, I could not agree more with this. This is one of those things that I'm so, like, I was taught from my graphic design background to always be confident in your work, whether you love it or you're not done with it yet, but you should always be confident in it. And I'm amazed and astounded how many people don't do that with their things online. Do you guys ever struggle with confidence?
Yup.
I will also say I am sick and tired of seeing self-deprecating ads on Project Wonderful webcomics. You know what I do? I don't click those.
Yep.
It's not funny.
I struggle with people not realizing how confident I really am.
Yeah, you know, The first comic that really took off for me, the system that I now do, I mean, part of, I think, why it took off was when it started, I was really proud of it. And I honestly feel
really
like...
really peppy.
Yeah, well, you know, I honestly feel like when people see it, if they just read a few, they'll like it. And I have faith in that, and I have confidence in that. And then...
I gotta say that when you initially... when you initially met me and you handed me a flyer for your first comic, The Rockets,
yeah,
I wasn't overly impressed by that first meeting. In fact,
yeah, I don't blame
you.
We
snubbed each other.
That's okay,
because
you were kind of a jerk.
I was, and then I learned how to be. And now that's actually a good point, though, is that when you're being confident, there is that fine line between being
confidence
a jerk
and overconfidence.
And being confident, yeah,
yes.
And that's something you got to be careful with, because I've actually threatened to punch
Thankfully,
people.
Thankfully, I've never crossed that line.
Like, people will come up to my table at shows, and I will just demand violence and want to punch someone in the face. And I'll see, like, another person watching that, because I'm just joking about it. But the person just walking up won't know that, and their eyes will go wide. And I'm like, no, don't worry about it. I only punch every other person in the face.
Mm.
And then that person stuck around and waited for the next person to show up.
That's why you have the loud punch sound effect on standby at all times to just... just like, you know, in case you ever need it.
Like, I actually have the Hawaiian punch creature with me. I pull him out of a bag and he just goes at it.
Are you ready for some Hawaiian punch?
I love that guy. I blame him for domestic abuse. God. Yeah, really.
You went there.
Wow. Yeah, I did. Totally did. Anyway, so have confidence in your work and don't go to Dern's table. Also featured in our educational section is a book that was recently featured on Boing Boing called Figure Drawing for All It's Work, A Book of Fundamentals for an Artistic Career. It was published by Andrew Lewis in the mid-20th century, was really famous and coveted for being this amazing good book on illustration and figure drawing, obviously. Has a lot of great things in it, but was out of print and has been out of print for a really, really, really long time. Now, for a long time, they mentioned this in the Boing Boing article, Disney had every bookstore near it had it worked out that if any copy came in, they automatically bought it and had it sent to them because it was that coveted. And it's easy to find PDFs of the stuff, but now a new version has just come out. It's in a lot better shape, and it's only $23 on Amazon. So if you are at all interested in figure drawing, which as artists out there, unless you do a comic like mine, you probably should be. You should go check it out. Also, the cover of the thing, double sexy. Right, Dern?
Oh, yeah. I do agree. Like, it's not just sexy because it's sexy in a design way, but then it's also sexy in a sexy way.
Yeah, it's sexy and sexy sexy. Mm-hmm.
Double sexy.
Mm-hmm.
Sexy squared.
Yes. So go check that out. Oh, God, I'm just remembering that my mom listens to this. Anyway,
hi, Mrs. Nover.
giving out too many things. Anyway, moving on to an article from Scott McCloud. He's still on his micropayment horse. And there's an article on GigaOhm that talks about new subscription models for comics where you can get bigger chunks for a price as opposed to the $1 for a certain amount and $3 for a certain amount. And his basic debate, and I think it's a pretty good one, is that the 99-cent price point could be attractive for one-off story if the comic was around 50 pages long before we add to the screen. But their comics have a crappy cost-to-minute ratio in terms of you buy it, you read it, you're done with it in about 10, 15 minutes in terms of that first read, and you're out, you know, $3-4. And so he's looking at this and saying, well, what, you know, this needs to be retooled a bit for the new digital medium. You guys have any thoughts on this?
I kind of agree with him. I think there's a lot of factors going on here, but the comic book industry is really factored on like a very linear, well, it's not quite linear, but the cost per comic and the break-even point is around 1,000 to 2,000 books, and it doesn't get tremendously more profitable making 500,000 comics.
Right.
Whereas digital comics, you have one break-even point, and then it's just pure profit after that. And I don't see why they don't want to realize that they need to chop it down. Mm-hmm. And go for the really big sales. They don't want a comic that's being sold to 2,000 people anymore. They want the comic that's sold to 200,000 people that now, costs the exact same.
Now, I think a lot of webcomics are very, very, very series-based. I mean, even when they're like Gag a Day, it's one series of Gag a Day, and it's keeping in that one series. So, like, the system now running for 3 years as of a couple weeks now, and same with Hello with Cheese and whatever. But do you think that, you know, this idea of a one-shot can really work for webcomics? Because there aren't that many examples of one-shot comics for webcomics really working out. In the same way that you know, series, you know, long-running things like Dr. McNinja's now been running a long time and mm-hmm. Questionable Content's been running a really long time. You know, these long series that have built up an audience. Can you do that with a one-shot? I mean, because it won't have that more of it sort of behind it, that building.
Well, I think you need to look at some independent books that are doing very good jobs of telling contained stories within a trade paperback format.
Mm-hmm.
You got like Atomic Robo or Hellboy. They do a very good job of keeping it tight, keeping get in, tell your story, get out. There's continuity there, which makes people come in and grab the next story.
Mm-hmm.
I think a webcomic that's designed specifically for the tablet audience could be successful for that because there is such a demand for
it. Let me ask this a slightly different way, and I'd love both your opinions slash all of your opinions if Fess feels like weighing in. Does doing a one-shot expand your audience or limit it?
In this unique situation, it will expand it because we're looking at a market with the tablet-based. The tablet market is going to explode in the next couple of years. Mm-hmm. It's already very big, and they're going to specific places to buy their content. They're going to the Android market. They're going to the Amazon market. They're going to the iTunes. And those three areas are just almost completely lacking comics in general.
Cool.
I tend to be someone who binges on media. Like I'll watch an entire season of something in one sitting, mm-hmm. and other things like that. So I don't know if I would really go for something that was just a one-off thing necessarily, mm-hmm. since I kind of like my media to be longer and involved.
Well, let's look at what we define one-off.
Well, kind of is longer. I mean, I'm talking like, let's say it's a 50-page story, completely self-contained.
Yeah, let's go with one-offs.
Let's go with the Scott McCloud approach. Exactly what he says in the article: 50 pages, self-contained, not relating to another story. Maybe involving characters from something else, but it's just a one-off thing. 50 pages, self-contained. Isn't that kind of like binging on a comic though? Because instead of getting one a day every day or three times a week or something, you're getting 50 at once. You are binging, but you're getting everything in itself contained.
Yeah, I guess I can see your point there.
This is why I host a show.
Like, there's a difference between how comics were made story-wise 30 years ago and how they were made in the 90s.
Okay.
It's actually 40 years ago for comics now, where you bought one comic and it sort of introduced the characters and they went through and they told their story. It was like Fantastic Four go to the Negative Zone, fight Annihilus, and then they get their butts back to Baxter Tower. Baxter Building, sorry. And now it's a case of if we do that story, it's part one of five and you have to get all five because... Or it'll be a story that will have that, and then there will be a three-part story right after it because eight comics fit into a trade paperback nicely. So we're writing to the trade now in the comic book industry, and we're not writing to the tablet story. Whereas I think it might be better to look more at like the manga style. Like if you look at a Naruto or a Bleach where it comes out in a week and it gives you 18 pages that tell... one step of the arc, and there's obviously a to be continued, and that whole arc then fits together later in a trade. I think those type of comics would do better as a 99-cent sale, not the 17-page part. I kind of agree that we need to bump the page count up to get 99 cents as a regular buy.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if 50 pages is necessarily where we need to go. What do you need? It would have to be basically 99 cents people are willing to spend for something that they would spend 3 minutes on repeatably. And so for a comic,
get that from? What sort of statistic is that?
It's
okay.
Songs. People are okay throwing down 99 cents for... They're okay paying 99 cents for Friday by Rebecca Black. So... At some point, there is that demographic out there that's what they've said, that they will spend a buck for 3 minutes that they can come back to a couple times.
Oh, that's sad. And it got the song in my head. Sorry. I hate that on so many levels. Don't
look at 180 seconds. And it would take that. You know what? I don't think it needs to be 50 pages at all. I think a 30-page comic can do 99 cents. But it has to tell a complete story.
I think 99 cents sounds like a pretty good amount for, about 20 or 30 pages could do the trick. I mean, yeah, it's something you can come back to. I don't know if the song analogy really works because, you know, the way people consume songs, the way people consume print is very different.
Yeah, I was just going to point that out myself.
I mean, I don't think
we'll get
a lot of
repetition from a song.
Right. But, you know, 99 cents is kind of the amount everyone's used to on apps. You know, 99 cents feels like fine, but anything over that feels like, I don't know.
$2.99 feels really expensive when you're looking at, like, the deluxe version of Angry Birds. You're
for
like, really?
A dollar, yeah.
I don't know. But for a dollar, you might even do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, people are more willing to do a dollar five times than they are $3.99 or $2.99 once. It's psychology. It's just one of those things. It's why bite-sized food goes as fast as it does. Anyway, we'll move on. If you guys would like to participate in the discussion, we'd love to hear what you'd want to buy. Just go over to thewebcomicbeacon.com. Sorry, it's just webcomicbeacon.com. No the. And go check it out. And please weigh in. We'd love to hear from you. Now, there were two articles this week on feminism and superheroines. One was about how wearing pants is not feminism. Actually, both were kind of about that. Due to the recent DC Comics reboot that talks about that all DC Comics heroines are now seemingly more clothed than ever before.
They all get to wear pants.
They all get to wear pants.
At least.
Right. And these articles basically talk about that's nice that you're wearing pants. That doesn't get to the real core of the issue with women in comics, which is that they all look like they all have the exact same body type. And there's absolutely no differentiation there.
Now, well, the guys all have the same body type, too.
Right. That's very, very true.
Which, that annoys the heck out of me, because, like, just look at the JLA. Mm-hmm. The Flash should have a runner's body, which is drastically different than a swimmer's body, which Aquaman should have, which is drastically different than a female bodybuilder, which I feel that Wonder Woman should have, which is different than a male bodybuilder, which should be Superman, which is different than a mixed martial art fighter, which is Batman.
I'm with you.
Yeah. But instead, we had Jim Lee do all the designs, and he does two body models. Well, he does three. He does female, male, and big male.
Ooh, who's big male?
Cyborg would be a big male, or
Hulk.
Hulk or Thing. I'm trying to think of DC examples.
Elvis. Yes. All these things.
Yeah. And the article also points out with the issue of the men's is that like male side characters in DC have all sorts of different body types, like the Commissioner in Batman and other sort of civilians and stuff like that. Whereas most of the women, superhero or not, still all have the same body type.
Yeah.
I can think of only one exception, and that's head of...
Aunt May.
No, Waller.
That's Marvel.
Amanda Waller. And yeah. She's Amanda a great Waller. Character because of it.
Well, the article mentions three that they love. Jenny Sparks, Martha Washington, and Yelena Rossellini. Rossini, sorry, as ones that the author of Comic Book Girl really likes. I'm on board. I think there should be a lot more variety. I think they're missing out on Tank Girl, which shows some really different body types and things. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think there's...
Neil Gaiman's Death is also a great example.
Yeah, all that stuff. So I think there are good examples out there, but they aren't in the mainstream universe.
They aren't in the pantheon.
So... Men and women out there that are working on comics, heed these words. Princesses don't need to wear pants, and change up your body types.
Pants
Not
don't
everyone.
Make you feminist.
Pants now, don't make you feminist.
We do need to note that we are looking at a bunch of Jim Lee covers on this DC reboot, right. And a bunch of Jim Lee designs. That might be hurting it because he's very set in his ways as an artist. They are doing some things that potentially could be very exciting. Like,
right.
I'm not going to crap on them just yet, because they are actually putting a lot more diversity into their books. They are they're coming out with a Black Batman book. They are coming out with a Mr. Terrific book. They are making books that are more for a world audience. So they're putting in that effort. They just might have put the wrong people in charge of it.
Well, or they just aren't making that effort clear on the covers. I mean, there's plenty of times when the covers don't accurately show what's going on in the inside pages. It happens
all
the time.
Which we're going to talk about later on the Tropecast for anyone who wants to stick around.
I don't know what that voice was. Sorry.
Sorry, Greg Horn. Anybody remember when Greg Horn actually, like, tried?
Who?
Greg Horn.
Greg Horn. Oh, okay.
He's a cover artist, and I'm looking at some of his covers, and they're just awful.
Yeah, that's a problem. Now, do you guys think that webcomics suffer from the same kind of TNA stuff that quote-unquote mainstream comics do?
Well, my favorite TNA webcomic does it with such equal opportunity aplomb that I'm going to give it a pass.
Ogloff?
Ogloff.
Yes. Yeah. They're pretty fair across the board. Yeah. In fact, if anything, all their women are voluptuous and the men are like weak and wimpy.
No,
except for the ones that keep having butt sex.
There are different body types for the women in Ogloff.
There are actually different body types. That's true. It's a great comic. I need to catch up on that. Anyway, sorry. But do you guys... No, but let's in terms of mainstream web comics, okay, that kind of niche of niche... Do you think there's feminism is well represented?
I think there are some great examples, and I think there are some horrible examples.
Yeah.
Okay, what's a great example?
A great example for feminism? Mm-hmm.
Questionable content? Lots of female characters?
Yeah.
Fair amount of body types?
People of color are represented. It's awesome.
Mm-hmm. Okay, what's a horrible example? Can I make you say one?
Least I could do.
Least I could do. Yeah. Gee, you think?
Yeah, that one has some problems in that range. Yeah.
And it's not like, yeah. I feel like that was a business
design.
That was a business design.
I once read this awful comic that was advertising on my website once. And it was just awful and misogynistic and horrible. And I was so angry at it that I went into Project Wonderful and I canceled their bid. I didn't even want their money.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't want your 20 cents. Keep your damn money.
Dimes, man.
Yeah. Awesome. Okay. Any final thoughts on the topic, since this is the last like big topic we're covering today?
Well, for equal opportunity nudity, I go completely in the other direction. It seems that the only nudity I put in my comics lately tends to be man-ass.
Yeah, it's man-ass. You're a big fan of man-ass, apparently.
Sometimes the man-ass sneaks in there on accident with alignments, which you can read on wizards.com. Mm. The man-ass was actually put in by the script.
Yeah. Can we just call that mass? There is a lot of it. It does seem rather massy.
Oh, mutt.
Now, whether or not the naked man in the comic is based off of the artist, something.
It looks a lot like God.
He's missing his tattoos.
Right. Well, no.
But it very much is his body type.
I can't wait to see the little blurb image for the newscast today, where it's just like, and we discuss Kickstarter and this and man butts. Just can't wait. Anyway.
Bring it home with the man ass.
Bring it home. So let's bring it home with a few quick stories. We mentioned it already, but NPR via the Kroll Witch Wonders mentions the Calvin and Hobbes 26 years later. I was kind of surprised this one got as much coverage as it did, simply because I've seen Calvin and Hobbes updated by people a few times. This isn't exactly new, but it's really well done. So
it's
that's
very
cool.
Nice looking. Yeah.
It's pretty. And I do like the idea that Calvin's just as much of a weirdo at the age of 30 something as he is at the age of 8 or whatever. Anyway, so they cover that, and which is a webcomic done by the webcomic Pants Are Overrated, which is mostly video game jokes. So it's great to see that they got some coverage for doing something they normally don't do at all.
Hint, hint, hint.
I hate when that happens. Anyway, also mentioned in brief, an article on the Steampunk Bible via Bleeding Cool has just come out. Mentioned some comic stuff, so you can check that out. And a few oddities as we finish up here. There is a comic apparently out there called Foreskin Man. And apparently in said comic, there's some rather evil and nefarious Jewish circumcisers known as the Monster Moil. And the Anti-Defamation League has a problem with this. I don't even know how to feel about this. So
I think just move on.
We're moving
let
on.
It, let it die.
Yeah. Also,
so Hitler.
Right. So Hitler. So the classic Hitler subtitled arguing about things videos. What's the movie called again? Can someone
Downfall?
Remember? Downfall. Thank you. Now one about the DC Comics reboot that I think describes things pretty well. Talking about how stupid it is to rename everything issue one, and new webcomic out there, Peanuts art plus Twitter posts, and it's called Peanut Twitter, is out there and pretty fun. It's a Tumblr.
Pretty funny.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. So you can go to Peanut Twitter. It shares that middle T. Oh God! The latest is
Weeder.
The latest is just Lucy standing there saying, "Holy Jesus! I have a new nerd boner." That's amazing.
I like the I'm now the four square mayor of your mom.
Yeah.
There have been some good ones. It honestly is a great juxtaposition. It's nice to see people playing with funny juxtapositions of things. I think there's also an argument to be made for, like how it's been able to be so popular by using tweets of people that would help promote it, you know, and that might be something that people interested in such things could look into. So, you know, there is some kind of strategy behind that, and those interested could think that kind of thing through. Do you think it's limiting though, at the end of the day, in terms of its possible scope? I mean, they're never going to be able to print this or anything like that.
I feel it's definitely going to be one of those moments. It'll take like a month of really hot burning and everyone's going to really enjoy it.
Like a flash in the pan.
Mm-hmm.
Like what happened to that Three Nuts thing. Is that still going? You know.
All right, then.
It could possibly go lolcats on us and just really get a dedicated zombie fan base. Mm-hmm. Or the Schultz and the Schultz estate could shut it down.
Bring the hammer down, yeah.
Somehow, I don't think this is the Garfield minus Garfield of Peanuts. I don't think they're gonna quite let
Probably
it.
Probably not. No.
Yeah, but you never know. All right,
hey, Russ,
well, yes.
One last question: do you know of any webcomics hitting milestones?
I know of two hitting milestones, actually, three even. This coming week, the week of, well, June 12th, the system is going to be hitting comic number 500 tomorrow. Happy to say. Yay! You should all go check that out. It'll be one of the big recap posts like I've done for every 100 or so. Also hitting milestones is Alex's comic is hitting a year. Yay, Alex!
Yay!
And Riley, that does Dead Winter, is hitting a, I forget which hundredth, but it's another hundred. Let's see.
Is it 500?
I don't think it's five. I think it's like, let's see.
The Webcomic Beacon newscast isn't supposed to do the milestones, though. But
Drat. Well, he brought it on the spot.
But yeah, with the thing with Riley and Dead Winter, every 100th, he does an animated one. So.
Oh, yeah, he's hitting 400. That's what it is. But so that's less cool. But anyway.
400's a bitch.
Yeah, clearly we're winding down. So we'll finish up the show here. Thank you all for tuning in on the chat room today. We love having you. We record every Sunday at 10:30 a.m. You guys should all turn in because we curse more on the Ustream. Right, guys? Yeah. So
yeah.
Thanks to Charm Say Shinobi, JT that stopped by before, Marshmallow Kitty, Audio Jam 68, both of you. I don't know why you're showing up on there twice. And all the guests that didn't feel like having names and are ashamed that they listen to the show. We appreciate all of you coming by. Thanks to all of you who listen. We do would love your feedback. So be sure to find us over at webcomicbeacon.com or email us at webcomicbeacon@gmail.com or find us on the Twitters. I am at Roscott. Alex, you are at Alex Heberling.
Yep.
Right? Dern is at DernJG. Fess yep. is at Fessworks. And be sure to check us out. Thanks again to Eric at exiern.com for doing all of our research. But we would love to hear from you guys if you have any stories or milestones of your own comics. Well, not milestones, but news of your own comics that you want us to cover. Send them our way.
I have some quick news to mention since.
Since this past week
we officially launched the Webcast Beacon Network. You can go to webcastbeacon.com, find the Webcomic Beacon, the Webcomic Beacon Newscast, the Tropecast, and newly Web Fiction World, all available there. I'm recommending people not go to the webcomicbeacon.com site right now because I am trying to work in the new URL redirections and stuff. So I'm pointing people to webcastbeacon.com. Be sure to go there to get the new RSS feeds because the old RSS feed is going to be broken and the iTunes feeds are still coming. We need to wait for approval and et cetera. But for more information, go to webcastbeacon.com. You can still reach the Webcomic Beacon and Webcomic Beacon Newscast at webcomicbeacon@gmail.com. And, of course, our voicemail is still 1-320-310-0922.
All right. Well, thank you all so much for tuning in today. We hope you've enjoyed the show. Thanks again to all of my guests, Alex, Dern, Fess, and Eric, once again. We will see you all next week here on the Webcomic Beacon Newscast. The Webcast Beacon, whatever. We'll see you next week. Be sure to tune in. Thank you all so much. Peanut butter and jelly. See you next time. Have a great week.